Now, I want to go today to this beautiful picture again to overview what we did very briefly before we move into another topic which is profound and will take a lot of time, maybe two times we have to meet on it. It is four levels of speech in Tantra, Kashmirian tradition, Kashmirian Shaivism. But before we go to that, which is very deep and we need more time and concentration especially, I would like to overview our sphota, the beginning of sphota. It seems that some people found it very fascinating and interesting, and it wasn't difficult. Was it difficult yesterday, last time? For some people it wasn't so easy. And I spoke to others and they said that I didn't really make my point somehow with all those varieties. Yes. So today I would like to make a point and then we proceed. So as we saw today, I can use this example of understanding, of holistic understanding of being, yes, which is preceding any other smaller understanding in language. That is that what Bhartrihari calls Vakya Sphota. So the meaning is grasped only in the text. But he says that that meaning is based on Shabda Brahman, on the existence of the holistic existence of all. And if that is not presumed or understood by all of us, we can't understand each other. We can't even see each other. We can't see what is happening, what is going on. We can't see and understand intentions if we do not presume one holistic all-being. If that is not, then there is no way to understand anything. Something is, and that is all this universe existing simultaneously in this moment of time, and on that ground, all the meanings are meaningful. Otherwise, they are not meaningful. They are not. It's quite clear. It's something which, when we discussed artificial intelligence, yes, that computer cannot understand the meaning because it understands meaning through other meanings. So, if to explain what is book for the computer, you have to explain what is to read, who is reading, man, who is man, and then more you explain, more is left to be explained. Because in the meaning of the book, there is a derivation of all other meanings. It is coming into this particular focus of the book from all other possibilities of meaning. You know? Otherwise, a book will not come into existence and will have no meaning. So, this is Shabda Brahman, from where we have a derivation of the text, which is bigger text. For example, text, and we will see later in Shaiva tradition, Abhinava Gupta will speak about intentions of Shabda Brahman, or intentions of Brahman to create certain texts or directions of development. Yeah? There are bigger texts, of which we are part with our smaller texts, of which there is a derivation of the smaller sentence in this particular time and space, of which there are words, of which there are varnas, and of which there is what we call that speech. So to come to that point, to this moment of time where when we speak this speech, the whole cosmos exists, and bigger texts are deriving smaller texts, which are deriving smaller texts, and coming down to this particular intention to express this particular formation of consciousness for particular purpose of creation, which that holistic text knows and drives and directs. Therefore, sphota as a disclosure of meaning is possible on every level of meaning. It is possible on the level of varna, on the level of phoneme. It is possible on the level of the morpheme, word. on the level of sentence, on the level of the text, and so on. Every bit of this expression is meaningful, and not only in comparison to each other, but meaningful in its own depth. It's like the drop of the ocean contains all the ocean. Yes, Shabda Brahman is defined by Bhartrihari. Anadi Nidhanam Brahma Shabda Tattvam Yad Aksharam. This is the thatness or the essence of the word. That is Shabda Brahma, which is imperishable. Vivartate artha bhavena prakriya jagato yata. And this Shabda Brahman is vivartate, is being turned upside down or being expressed in the world as a process of manifestation. In time and space, there will be certain actions of this essential, meaningful existence of being, knowing itself in this particular way. This knowledge of itself is that the word which will carry that knowledge out of that being in that particular way, manifesting in a particular time, a particular form, through all those texts, huge and small, intentional, used by us as souls and beings. Well, that is quite important to say, because we will see that Sphota, the revelation of meaning, is possible on all levels. That is the most puzzling thing, yes? That how can you really understand the meaning on the smallest level? Already it is meaningful because it relates to the highest, to the deepest meaning of the Shabda Brahma. Well, it's rather puzzling, but it is interesting. So if I go through all these levels again, I don't want to make you tired before we go into Tantra, because we've dwelled too long on it. But would you like to go through all these levels again and to see them briefly, how the meaning is gathered? Yes? Because it's a tiring thing, yeah? But it is very simple in a way. So, in Varna Sphota, how meaning is being created, it is through the particular articulation of phoneme. Because this articulation has a particular purpose, intention, color, context in which it is articulated in this and not other way, it carries this particular meaning of this time and this environment. We were using the example of Alabama people when it... Yes, Alabama, when they are... I can't make it now, Alabama. When I will use it for the sake of showing that I am not from this place. Now then it becomes Varna Sphota, it indicates certain meaning, that I am of certain kind, person speaking certain language, have certain belief system, and so on and so forth. In a grammar it is used as a from bottom to top method, where you start with alphabet, you create with phoneme, and then you create morpheme, affixes, suffixes, prefixes, and so on, and you grow to the level of the word and syntax, morphology and syntax. It is used for analysis, but it is only there as Bhartrihari says, you can analyze your pronunciation, if you by speaking, analyzing, can analyze your pronunciation, you lose the meaning of the phrase. You try it. It is an interesting thing. When you will start speaking as you should, you will always lose the track of what you wanted to say. Because what you wanted to say is one stream of consciousness, and articulating that meaning is another stream. So that is always in between these two fires the speaker is. So when the speaker comes to the give his speech, he is very skillful to articulate certain expressions and to stick to his intention. He is in between two fires every time. Once you are caught into the articulation of meaning, whether you are right or not, should you use that word or not, you are losing the track. So once you are becoming grammatical in your mind, you can't really proceed with your intention. That's why it's better to drop that and to be full of mistakes, but to bring your meaning forward and to learn to do it every time better and better. It's a balance. It's a very subtle balance between the two. So Padasphoda believes that, and there are two different approaches to it, to this Padasphoda, that the meaning of the word is the major meaning, not of the sound, but of the word. So it is from these words that the meaning of the sentence is gathered. That's the belief.
Pada means foot, right?
Pada means many, yes, meanings. One
meaning could be foot.
One foot, one is word. Pada is also word. Yes, the word is the carrier of the meaning. The word is the single meaning-bearing unit. Now, there are two beliefs here. One is that the word is a part of a bigger text, and therefore its meaning depends on that bigger text, or that the word itself has that meaning and can create any text. So these two different subtleties, which will be in approach to jati, pada, sphota, that is what we were discussing later, as a cowness, as a universal meaning of the word standing behind the particular meaning of the word. And the particular meaning of the word has no much place because it refers always to the universal. And opposite, more associative, that the particular meaning of the word is more associated with the universal, and the universal does not dominate it. I want to show you that these are just approaches of consciousness, nothing else. So you can feel it within yourself when you change it, you shift the perception, and you can understand both. Vakyasphota, it is that what Bhartrihari believes, is the text itself is a meaningful unit. And there is no meaningful word in the text which is not utilized fully by the text. So you cannot draw out of the text the meaningful word, because of the child or Balakasya would have no meaning, because the meaning is not of Balakasya, but meaning is in the text that Balakasya madhuram asti, that he has a sweet, and that is the meaning of the phrase and the meaning of sphota. So before the sentence is finished, as we analyzed last time, we cannot understand the meaning of the word, of the phrase. That's what contribution of Bhartrihari, and he says that this text is a part of the bigger text, and a part of the bigger text. So Balakasya Madhuramasti is not finished text, though it has its own meaning, But it is said in a particular context, which has a bigger text. If we were analyzing the presumption last time, when teacher comes in and says, "Don will go to Moscow," he presumes too many things. There is a bigger text there which is waiting and which is supporting this meaning. So Balakasya Madhuramasti, the boy has a sweet, presumes other things, other bits of the text, where this text is meaningful. So it opens up, and that text opens up to bigger text, and that text opens up to bigger text, and so on. So there are different approaches where Pada is treated as indivisible, meaningful entity. You cannot divide it into suffixes, stems, roots, prefixes, and so on, endings. There are no divisions. There is a meaningful balakasya. There is no balaka and balakasya, sya is suffix of genitive case. Yes? And there is also opposite to this. There is also the same akhandavakya spurta. Then the sentence is meaningful only as indivisible, or you can divide it into the subject, object, predicate, and so on. So this is it. This is the whole vision. We are starting from the global text meaning of one being, where we are all parts. Then we derive this text. We are in India now, we are not in Germany, and we are not in France, and not in Russia. That means something. Yeah? It means something already, defining all meanings and articulating them differently than if we were in our countries. And then it comes down to Auroville, which is another meaning, adds to it Matrimandir and Charter and Vision and everything else. And then we come down to Savitri Bhavan, and then we come down to our studies, and then we carry all that luggage. Can you imagine how much we carry from our countries, from our education, and we bring it here, and we try to communicate. And then what we do this. Thanks. As you said. We can't do more than that. Now, this was an introduction to that, what I wanted to speak today about, and that is the four levels of speech in Tantra. Now, this tantric tradition is the most prominent in the studies of the word. Kashmiri and Shaivism, utilizing this quarter theory, they refer to Bhartrihari all the time, by the way. But what is happening here is something very interesting. They are kind of stepping back, with already their rational mind, they are stepping back into the Vedic perception of the word. And they try to recapitulate, to review, to recapture that perception. So, Shabda Brahman in Tantra is known as Paravak, as the transcendental word, the supreme speech, which is seen as a part of the supreme consciousness, Chit. Now, Abhinava Gupta is one of those great tantrics who wrote many different treatises. One of those is very famous, Tantra Loka. And he says, when she, Paravak, is differentiating, then she is known in three terms as Pashyanti, Madhyama, and Vaikari. These are terms which we used before. Pashyanti, seeing speech, Madhyama, mediating speech, middle word, and Vaikari, gross one, articulating, expressing speech. This is the hierarchy of the word. So according to him, the differentiation on the phonemes, words and sentences is inherent in Pashyan Divak. And that is the key to many, many understandings and misunderstandings. How come that the meaning is preserved on the level of the phoneme? It is because the differentiation of phonemes, words and sentences is inherent in that flesh intention. Pashyan Divak is that flesh intention which comes, is not yet differentiating the subject and object, what is signified and what is signifier within its own intention. It holds on to it, but it has in it all those differentiations of phonemes, words and sentences as not yet differentiated meaning. So this definition is quite interesting for us. When we find it fully corresponding with our scheme of the sign. You remember our scheme? Made earlier. I will come to it again. So Ramakanta gives us a very valuable orientation commenting on Spandakarikah. And here we have Vaikarika nama kriya jnana mai bhavati madhyamavak iccha punah pashyanti sukshma sarvasam samarasa vrittihi. The speech is indeed an action. He sees the speech as an action. The mediating part of the word is made of knowledge, jnanamayi. The will is its visionary part, pashyanti, which is subtle and is common essence in all of them. Now, we have this differentiation, kriya, action by the expression, jnanamayi, knowing what it is in madhyama, and will or intention in pashyanti. So pashyanti is the highest, flashing intention down, creates within the language environment knowing what it is, how to relate it to any context, any language, and then it acts as an expression of Vaikari. I will encourage you to read these things later, because I can't really dwell on all of them, all those notes. They are very valuable and interesting, especially in a view when we will finish our studies, to go back. So Paravak, let us see what is this transcendental word. Abhinava Gupta describes the Paravak as transcendental word, beyond creation. The very essence of the supreme reality, ever-present and all-pervading. He says about it, satata udita, ever active, eternally present. Ever active, eternally present consciousness. You cannot reduce it, satata udita. It is thus identical with pure consciousness chit, which is the ultimate reality. It is conceived of as a luminous vibration, spurata, of pure consciousness itself, carrying within itself the whole cosmic manifestation, which is shining within it without any differentiation. He also says that Paravak is indeed present on all the levels of Pashyanti and others, For without her, darkness and unconsciousness would prevail. Where it comes from is an interesting question. Everything, stones, trees, birds, human beings, gods, demons, and so on, is but the venerable supreme word present in and consisting of everything in the form of, that is, identical with the Supreme Lord. I will not read any Sanskrit quotations. This statement that consciousness is pervading all the levels of creation and is expressed by all of them, is fundamental for Indian approach to language. And if this higher consciousness would not be present within the creation, all would fall back into inconscient. This view is clearly Vedic. The creation was conceived, according to the Veda, in two stages. First, out of himself the Supreme created all the worlds, and then he entered them. Atmanatmanam abhisam vivesha. So if he would withdraw his consciousness, the luminous word, the creation would again fall into the darkness. André Padou comments on the nature of the Supreme Word in his book Bach. Thus we see the role played by the supreme level of the word in this conception of the supreme consciousness. The latter is pure light, but in it the cosmos exists archetypically and undifferentiatedly prior to all manifestation. This results from its twin aspect of prakasha and vimarsha, or pratyavimarsha. There are two aspects of consciousness. That is, from its being both consciousness or light and word. There is consciousness light, prakasha, and there is vimarsha, consciousness word, within the same one consciousness. Or, to say it differently, both pure, luminous, prakasha, changeless consciousness and consciousness holding the paradigm of the cosmos in this word, which, as it were, whispers it to and within consciousness and therefore makes it reflectively and introspectively aware, or brings about a representation of the cosmos. It's a good statement. You can read it later again. Actually, he has a wonderful book on tantras. Now, this prakasha and vimarsha within one consciousness, where vimarsha is not differentiated from prakasha, where the word is the same as the light, but whispers it as if to the same consciousness, about manifestation and everything what is to be done and manifested in the world of this one being, it's already there in some form, undifferentiated, difficult for us to grasp because we are differentiating and grasping.
But it has to be some kind of potential, otherwise if there would be no potential, how
can it be? This is the potential of that being. Yes.
Just before the word becomes the word.
Yes. It's that what Shri Aurobindo calls in his terminology kshobha, that vibration of consciousness without which nothing is possible. If there is no kshobha vibration, then the being knows itself as such. It doesn't move anywhere. It is. It knows itself without knowing itself different or in manifestation. But once the kshobha takes place, the vibration takes place, then the differentiation takes place. And then manifestation of that oneness takes place in all these forms. But yes. Yes, in terms of physics, it's the same. But the light of being is a subtle vibration within itself, knowing all possibilities of manifestation, but not yet in that kshobha way, not yet coming out of itself. So Pashyantivak, this is the first flash of that transcendental which cannot be known. That's why I don't speak more of it, because it can't be known, can't be differentiated. But there are two aspects within it. It's good for us to know that there are two already there. There is a consciousness and power. There is chit and shakti. So this shakti is completely identical with chit. It's not yet moving out. The power is consciousness, knowing itself as the being, Sat-Chit-Ananda. So, Abhinavagupta writes in Tantra Loka, Pashyanti hi kriya, tasya bhagau purva parosthitau. Of that, paravak, that transcendental seeing, speech is indeed the active part. So this is the shakti moving out. As if the perception is left staying and the action as if moving out of perception. So this is the seeing part, kshobha. For she, paravak, has two parts. The first, the inner, and the next, the outer of manifestation. This should be seen, etat drashtavyam. Thus, the vimarsha, power of paravak, reveals itself from its origin in the form of pashyantivak. So this vimarsha, this word which is identical, the power of the word which is identical with the consciousness, comes out and becomes perceptible to us. So the vimarsha part of paravak becomes the active part of pashyantivak. On the next level of manifestation, it is conceived as the first movement of wanting to know. It is conceived as the first movement of wanting to know. It is of non-dualistic nature, where the division on subject and object is not yet being made. There is no yet subject-object, but there is a desire or the wish, ichha, intention to know itself as another. Now, I add this another, because in that particular, that transcendental consciousness, he knows himself already as he is. Now he wants to know himself in particulars, in particular manifestations, in details. He wants to see himself. He wants to know himself as another. But this flesh is still of non-dualistic nature. It contains both. Nahi prathamajnana kale bhedo atras purat yatra vachya vachaka vishesha yohu abheda. This is the definition of Abhinavagupta. In this first moment of cognition, there is no separation yet. There is no distinction between the signified and the signifier. Can you imagine the state of consciousness where we all have it all the time? Every moment of time we have this urge to do things, to say things, to know ourselves, and so on and so forth. It's that undifferentiated movement of consciousness where we do not know what it is yet. It's gone. What was that? It didn't take shape. It didn't take dress of the language, so you can't say what it was. But it was something. That is Pashyanti. It's a demand from us, to manifest, to express something which comes to us as if ours, because it is all subjective, but it is not ours. We are here radio stations. We receive the signals and express them all the time. And we think it is our signals. Of course, it's my expression. No, it's neither your expression nor your wave which came to you. You are the receiver and the expressor according to the development of your instrument. And by that you grow, and your consciousness grows, and your soul grows.
Isn't it the same thing with thoughts? We think we're thinking. Thoughts are coming.
This is
thoughts. We are this big receiving station here thinking, I'm thinking this, but this is what we're catching.
Yes.
And so, after all you've said, I think like, there's got to be a universal mind and a universal language bank or whatever. It's the what you call the supreme or parama. And everybody sort of, if you don't connect to it, then you're not going to understand even the first thing that the other person says. We're always referring to this one.
Exactly.
A Brahman.
Yes.
And if you actually understand it, then in your daily life you stop feeling the distinction between you and me, and I think it starts to blur it a bit.
That's why we can learn different languages. Otherwise, can you imagine? If they all refer to different realities, they all refer to one reality. They are expressions differently made, but they refer to the same reality. On that ground, we understand them, we can learn them. Yes. Yes, yes.
Frenchness, the Englishness, the Russianness, whatever it is, you know, all this construct that we call our identity. And then there's a moment where something shifts, and that is kind of receding. It's not so much on the forefront, but it's receding, and then the world becomes broader, something expands, and in our consciousness it does with you. And then there's yet another moment, which is bigger still, where really we all understand without separateness, and there's this really physical experience, psychophysical experience of belonging to the same reception radio station, whatever it is. Yeah. And it does feel like that. It's like a small implosion on it, or explosion, and it's very this. I would say sensual, the sense is captured. It's almost physical. I feel it in through my senses, but finally.
Yeah, it's tangible. Yeah. This is what it is, yes. And believe it or not, Bhartrihari considered this path to be the path to liberation. You can, through analyzing how the word works, come to mukti, to liberation of the spirit. So we are trying to do the same. I like your description, it was beautiful. That. Yes, these deviations from certain texts to other texts, these shifts from one set of meanings to another, widening, so to say, or narrowing down, both ways. We are always doing it, narrowing down and widening up. Wherever we want to clarify some points, details, they are also very valuable and very meaningful, small details. But they don't feel as vast as that. Yes? If we can stay vast and see the details at the same time, this would be the thing. But that is the most difficult, to have vidya and avidya, both. To have a transcendental perception of all beings and at the same time to perceive all the details on all the levels. That is that consciousness of the Lord. Yes, so there is no separation on these two yet. There is a moment where we receive this flesh, we do not know what it is, we are seeking an expression of it, and we find an expression in art, or music, or word, poetry, or anything. It just urges us to express, to find a dress for it. And we find suitable or less suitable dresses for this flesh. And we carry on, and that comes again and again. And as Shubindo says, these flashes of higher, of transcendental, of this intuition are flooding us, but we are not perceptive enough. We are not really conscious enough of their presence. We are busy with our small, narrow things, and we miss them all the time. So if we open our consciousness, our radio station, our wave, to receive more wider floods of intuition, they are there. We are all under this rain, constant rain of these intuitions. That is Pashyanti Vak. So Pashyanti Vak can be described as a transition from the stage of total undifferentiation to the stage of differentiation. The supreme, non-supreme state of the word, para-para. The transcendental and on this side already. One foot is there and one foot is here. This is Pashyanti. It is connecting us to the transcendental. And because of that it can widen our scope. And because of that we can see more meanings, wider view. And it's interestingly expressed, look at this, which connects pure subjectivity with objectivity. Ahanta with idanta, I-ness with this-ness. Ahanta, aham, I, ahanta, I-ness with idanta, with this-ness. These two coexist in her with predominance of the subjective aspect of I-ness, ahanta, which already on the Madhyama level will change and both will be equalized, as it were. Now on the Madhyama level, ahanta and idanta become equal. Subject and predicate become both necessary for the expression of meaning. You can't express meaning only by the subject. You need to have a predicate. If I say to you, a tree is... not clear. I am not clear what you are, because the predicate is not finished. So the meaning will be expressed in equal sense on Madhyama later, but here the dominance of I-ness, of ahanta, is there over this-ness. It is not yet this which is to be expressed, but I is being still expressed. Now, if you look into the syntax, and I want to look now with this I-ness and that-ness, syntax is always, it's like mathematical formula. A plus B equals C. Now, if I don't do this equal, and what is equal? I am, I is A, equals, I am, M is equals, student. I am a student. Now, student is equal to I. Teacher is going. Teacher equals going. It's a simple mathematical equation. This is Madhyama. This is what we have in every text. If you don't have that equation, there is no meaningful text. If I-ness and that-ness are not equalized, then there is no text. There was nothing said on the level of Madhyama. Does it make sense? You will start seeing now differently every word. And it doesn't matter in which language. It doesn't matter that it is analytic, or it is synthetic, or it is agglutinative, or it is isolative type. All of them have the same need to express itself with subject and object equalized, put into one equation. Otherwise, there is nothing said. Now you see, this is what it is, structural semantic. This is what we call syntactics, syntax. One is equal to another. And if I don't do that comparison, I don't say anything. This is how our mind works. It's a logic. Without this, mind cannot understand. Mind cannot understand I. It wants to know what I is. You is not enough for the mind. You are what? I, what? What? It asks for object. It wants to know what I is equal to. Otherwise, it cannot deal with this. It's in Pashyanti, its I-ness is dominating. Now, I want you to have this sensible perception of this I-ness. Now, what is the cause of Pashyanti? How is it invoked, set into motion? The explanation given by Abhinavagupta is quite interesting. Let us look into this. Whatever is thus aspired or wished for is indeed awakened by the necessity of a certain action, and it is by only following that awareness that Pashyanti gets the perception of it and is set into motion. Now, again, I have to read because the meaning is whist. I can hear it while finishing the sentence so that I lost it on the way. Whatever is thus aspired or wished for is indeed awakened by the necessity of a certain action. Now, if there is a necessity or aspiration for certain things, it is by only that necessity or that aspiration that the Pashyanti is awakened. Now, Abhinavagupta compares it to a psychological process of memorizing, smriti. Now look into this. By which certain events recall certain images which appear in the consciousness, as if they were caused by this will to know or the will to remember something which was as if forgotten. Now, here we can clearly see that the agent provoking the Pashyanti Vak is within man. It is his own aspiration towards knowing or perceiving, abhipsitam, that which is to be, which is wished for, wanted, aspired. In the memory, when you want to remember something, what is happening? Suppose you remember that you want to remember, but you don't remember exactly what happened. What is happening in that moment of time in your consciousness? This process is described. So, it is a will to know or a will to recollect the details. You gather your consciousness, you gather the will, it is not yet there, it is not yet coming, and then it is flashing. Ah, this is it. That's how it works.
Is it related to something like that I observe today at noon when I research and I'm dealing with a Sanskrit word, but there is an English meaning for it, and they will give two words for it, you know. And then I wonder, isn't there my mother tongue word which tells both? And then I'm just searching somehow. the negative world which is covering actually those things.
This is the researcher's aspiration. What happens in the research, usually, you know, how it is done, scientific research or any other, there is a great aspiration and need to know. There's hundreds of things, nothing fits. Then you relax your consciousness, you forget about this for a day, and it is there.
It's like a light bulb.
Yes. This is what we call in English aha moment, yes?
Yes.
So what is happening in that aha moment, that there was a great aspiration to know, calling for Pashyanti flesh, tuning to that flesh, all your receptacles of your consciousness, of your mind, vital, physical, taste, smell, everything, to that, to receive that knowledge. And then relaxing, and that is there, it comes.
You know, that Shruti did have this mantra singing for all the chakras, and for this one it's aha. So, to activate this one.
Yes. Aha is well, but yes. So, yes. The power of will, Ichha Shakti, which is the very characteristic of Pashyanti, is carrying within herself the power of cognition, Jnana Shakti, and the power of action, Kriya. All of them are inherent in this flesh. In fact, the will to be aware, Bubhutsa, in its nature, is awareness itself. Bodha Sambhava, according to Abhinava Gupta. The will to be aware is awareness itself. It says a lot. Nishtha, you wanted to say something?
No, just intent on that, what you say.
It is interesting to mention here how the hierarchy of Pashyanti Vakya is being defined. According to Abhinava Gupta, there is always a greater will, Mahapashyanti, and smaller ones, Pashyantis, many. For instance, he gives an instance. I go to the village, says Abhinava Gupta. It's a sentence. It's an intention. I will go to the village, and it is my main will, Mahapashyanti. But I am leaving my house, locking it, checking the lights, switching off. Why? Because I am going to the village. So there are many actions in between smaller Pashyantis, smaller flashes, smaller realizations which have to be made according to this bigger Mahapashyanti. So to go to the village implies many other actions. Similarly, one should see the plane of Sadashiva, of the Lord, as a great Mahapashyanti, in comparison to which all other wills of individuals, being subjects to Maya, are smaller Pashyantis. Moreover, all the greater Mahapashyantis can finally be seen as those included into the supreme Para Mahapashyanti, which is Paravak herself. Now, we are dealing here on we are gathering time factor and space factor. We are stretched in time. Our small Pashyantis are factors of time, defined by these factors of time. But when we gather them, all these events, that's why what Rod says, all this evolution, we have to understand that it is uninterrupted process. Can you imagine that? That this is, if I turn it back, what would I see? It's one being, it's stretched in time. This is Mahapashyanti of that Paravak. We don't see it because of Maya aspect. Maya, creative force, makes us aware of certain details which we have to carry on, to carry out in this manifestation. Now here I will stop for today, and next time we will move into Madhyamavak, proper linguistic studies. Yeah, up to now it was all about pre-linguistic studies. So thank you very much.